anyway, thanks for being here today. I'm still amazed that people would come during lunchtime to hear this. So, and again, you know, it was kind of interesting your conversation about being growing up on the border and living moving to Baltimore, and so. You know, obviously, you can probably imagine I'm not from West Michigan, and so that, and this is the truth is that I've had seven different people ask me if I'm from Australia. So I grew up in West Michigan, and so I grew up in North Carolina. So I now say I'm from South Australia. So so at any rate, it's funny. So yeah, you know, and again, just to, you know, a little bit about my background too is and thinking about the other presentations that you've heard today, are that I'm not sure if I should have been the warm up or if I'm sort of, you know, taking this, you know, my presentation can be way down from the three that you've seen, and because, you know, one of the things too is that, you know, I said I worked for the state Medicaid program in Texas for about 6 years, and so, you know, one of the things that I always thought was that, you know, it's very difficult for public health practitioners to make sense of data, and, you know, so a lot of the things that I keep seeing, you know, are people that just really have trouble with basic statistics and sort of basic meaning, and so mine is going to be not, you know, sort of really interesting Poisson models or, you know, sort of the things that we've seen, but we're talking about margins of errors, standard errors, and simple two proportion Z test. So again, I'll apologize if you came to see something more than that. So but given that, that tells you a little bit about who I am and what I think. And so, you know, again, I like to borrow this quote from Tip O'Neill, right, the old Speaker of the House, back with Ronald Reagan, and he said, you know, that all politics are local. And I think, right, we can apply the same thing to health, right? So if all politics is local, right, all health is local. And today, right, we keep seeing that decisions are being driven lower and lower and lower to the lower level. So, and you know, probably no matter where you are, right, we're trying to think about how do we tackle poverty, how do we tackle health disparities, how do we do chronic care management? Those are at the local levels, right, instead of sort of these bigger programs that we've seen. And, of course, too, I think, right, as we see more and more healthcare being turned over to HMOs, for example, right, that will be responsible for the entire health outcomes, right, the accountable care organizations, right, they have to think more about the locality of the health. They have to understand where those health disparities are and how to solve those. So, so think again, right? We're moving to lower and lower levels. So, too, if you think about the Affordable Care Act, and Michigan's kind of an interesting state, and I think there are several other states like Michigan where all of the hospitals are non-for-profit. And if you're familiar with this portion of the Affordable Care Act, and again, I know there's millions of parts to it, but there's the community health needs assessment component to it, right? And so all not-for-profit hospitals are now required to do a community benefit analysis, and part of that, right, is this community health needs assessment. So if you were to go home today and Google, you know, your local non-for-profit hospital, they will have a report posted that they have had to do on sort of a community health needs assessment. And again, you know, sort of what gets my goat, right, as sort of a statistician and looking at some of these things is that they'll say, well, you know, poverty in X county is worse than the state average. Well, how do you know that, right? And so all of these things, right, have been taken from the American Community Survey or some sort of census data. So, but they've not given the user much data. So, and I've, you know, out of all the ones that I've seen, and I've looked at a lot of them because, you know, I think they're quite interesting. So, but again, if we think about what we're doing here, and I will say this, right, at least in theory, right, the idea of the community health needs assessment was to establish this link between public health and the clinical health care delivery system, even if that's not necessarily the case, right? You know, a lot of it is really about our not-for-profit hospitals doing, are they justifying in getting their not-for-profit status, right? And that's sort of what this community health needs assessment is, right, is aligning the work that they do with the community needs and saying, yes, that is the community benefit, and therefore they justify their tax-exempt status. So, and of course, they'll be taking a harder look at that. And then also, if you've seen any of these too, there's sort of this broad indicator movement, and you know, I sort of use that term loosely, but you know, and again, if you look at organizations, you know, probably all the big foundations, you know, if it's Kellogg, if it's Kresge, if all of those sorts of folks, right, you know, there's pressure to make the investments and make them wisely, right? And so we also sort of see this data democratization movement and the lowering of technological barriers. You know, for example, I remember, you know, going down into the bowels, and I can't even remember the name of that building at Chapel Hill, and writing my first, you know, sort of SAS code, and right, and you entered into the mainframe and hit return, and you would leave, right? And you would come back the next morning and pray to God that it ran, right? Because it might have blown up, right? And you would never know. And then you get this error message, and so you go, oh, no, you know, and you'd have to reprogram it. So, but right, we can do all these things on our machines today. Also, you know, too, I taught myself sort of GIS, and if any of you guys, you know, have done any GIS work, you know, and it makes me mad, you know, because it's so easy now, right? And you can take a spreadsheet and drag it and drop it onto your map, and whoop, you know, all the points, you know, for anybody who did it back in the old days, right? We had to go get the relationship files, download those from the census, and build an address locator, you know, and again, you know, sort of looking at where all these things were, and of course your addresses were out of date the moment, right, that you know, the new highways and roads went in. So it was, you know, but all of these things, right, have conspired so that everybody knows how to do these things now, right? And so people expect more with this. And again, so, and you know, if we think about the social determinants of health and what we've been talking about today, and you know, and again, I think, you know, if I were to have followed, you know, Ms. Wren's presentation, you know, where she were talking about longevity, right, and sort of poverty, this is it, right? Because, you know, a lot of the hospitals, a lot of people don't actually have, right, the mortality data. So, but what do you know, right? You do know that poverty is highly associated with all those rotten outcomes. You know that health insurance is associated with all of those rotten outcomes. Do you need the death index? Do you need that data? No. So, you know that the SNAP data, right, and sort of the food stamps, right, that's going to tell you where people are food insecure. Is it going to tell you where everybody is? No, but it's going to give you a very good idea, right? Transportation barriers, vehicles, you know, households without vehicles, too. And again, right, all these sorts of spatial things that we can begin to look at, you know, but they're in the American Community Survey. Very exciting stuff. And if you're familiar at all with the American Community Survey, right, it replaced the long form of the survey. And you know, anybody who used that old data in 2000, you're like, you can't wait for the next survey to come 10 years later, right? And of course, right, that's the problem, right? Think about how fast you're, and dynamic probably the neighborhoods and places where you live. They are changing, you know. And what to me is so amazing, if you think about sorts of the questions that we can answer, And what the American Community Survey does, right, is we have 1 year, 3 year, and 5 year estimates, and I won't deal a whole lot on those, but again, right, the 1 year is sort of the quick and dirty. They're going to be at higher geographies. They're going to be at counties, big cities. And then, you know, if you want to think about where things are within your cities and counties, right, you'll have to use sort of the 5 year estimates. But again, all this stuff is on the census, and I have a link to it at the end of the presentation. So what do I think, right, is the biggest improvement from the American Community Survey? And two, if you think about, you know, and it's funny, as I think, you know, I'm really not that old, but then I think, yes, I am getting old, right? You know, as I think back to 2000 when I first started working with census data and having to go in and calculate your own margin of errors on everything, right? They gave you some sort of technical guide and sort of told you their sampling methodology, but you really had to go in and calculate all these yourself. So what do they provide for you today? And those are those two things that I provided in the red arrows. I don't remember exactly what those are, but those were for kids. You really had to go in and calculate all these yourself. So what do they provide error, right, of the estimate? They provide you with the margin of error of the percent of those. So, you know, and again, if you know the margin of error, you can calculate the standard error, and you can calculate to figure out whether or not there are real differences between groups. And I'll show you why this is important. And so just to give you a little example too, and if anybody's, you know, those of you who are from Michigan, you know, they always do the mitten, right? It's a hand, right? So like that. So everybody says, you know, it's the hand. So right in Grand Rapids is over there. There's Detroit, and Dr. Sanchez is from Ann Arbor, which is sort of close to Detroit there. So there's a little geography for us. Here's sort of a question that I deal with from time to time, and I just sort of put this together as I was thinking about what I would talk about today. So, and you'll see people say this, right? Did the proportion of people receiving food stamps, right, SNAP, between 2011 and 2000 in Kent County, did it change? Was there any increase? And, of course, what are most people going to look at? And, again, that's what I was talking about. If you were to take those, all of those community health needs assessments, right, and I've said, if you go back and Google and download the one that's done at your local hospital, I will guarantee almost to the report that they will report numbers like this, and they'll say, yes, there's a difference. It's gone up, right? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know, right? Do we want more people on SNAP? Sometimes yes, perhaps, right? It's a signal of a weak economy. But the issue, right, is that without looking at the margin of error, without knowing and thinking about those things, right, many people draw the wrong conclusion, right? And so what would they say? Yes, 16.4 is bigger than 17.5, right? So therefore, the proportion is different, right? But that's the wrong conclusion. And again, I've just sort of taken this out. The census has done a marvelous job, and it's one of the best reports I've seen. You know, government gets beat up a lot. But if you were to go and look at any of the data, I mean, the data user guides that the census has done, it is the most straightforward thing. If any of you guys teach a basic statistics class, it is wonderful. And if you get your students to understand, again, statistics for non-statistical people, if you can get them to understand standard errors, right, margin of errors, right, confidence intervals, all of those basic things, right, to be good consumers of basic data, think about how far we will have advanced. So, again, that's just sort of a screenshot, too, right? And that's it, right? There's your two proportion z-test. Very easy to do. So what I did, too, in teaching, I built this little calculator in my spreadsheet. So, and of course, what do you have to do, right? You just put in the proportions, right, 16.4 with a margin of error of 1% and 17.5, a margin error of 1.2%. So we calculate and we look, right? The conclusion is they're not different, right? So, and that's what I keep saying, right? What do we need to do is stop people from focusing on that nominal change, right? We want people to think about what is the statistical change, because people go out, I think, oftentimes and make the wrong judgments, and they talk about it in the community as if things are getting worse, things are getting better, this is happening here, when in fact, what? It's not, right? So we're just as likely to get 17.5% in 2011 as we were to get 16.4% in 2012, right? That's sort of the upshot if we want to think about it in those terms. So I've sort of put together this calculator. If you were to go out and Google this too, there are people who have done marvelous jobs. In fact, you know, thinking about Florida, that at, I think it's University of Southern Florida, they have a transportation institute. You know, they had a nice grant where somebody sort of put together this same sort of thing, a calculator that does sort of all of these things using, you know, American Community Survey or census data. And so the little calculator that I've done is that, you know, and again, I've sort of looked and looked at a lot of these, and people have done them. There's wonderful. There's a nice one that's done, I think, from somebody at University of Maryland, Baltimore, I believe. But at any rate, there are wonderful ones, you know, so we do other things. What if we want to change the confidence interval? What if we want to add two or more values, ratio or value or percent, do a ratio of value to a percent, percent to a value? What are some of the other things that I've dealt with where I look, where I think, what do we need to do that I haven't sort of programmed yet is, you know, sort of those inflation-adjusted terms, right? So as per capita income dropped from 2011 to 2012. And those are really difficult, right? Because if you take the inflation-adjusted, you know, because the data, right, for 2012, the numbers are going to be different because they have different inflation factors put on those. So I think and this one's not very difficult to do. I just never thought to do it. But again, what are the things we're thinking about? Median income, per capita income, home values, things such as that. Oops, sorry, I was trying to make sure I didn't talk too long. So here again, too, and I not to take credit for all this stuff because I've stolen a lot of good stuff that people have done. So, and, you know, too, I just found that someone at the Oklahoma Department of Commerce had done a wonderful, I take this and put it in my spreadsheet. I talk a lot about it in class. But this one again, right, this one will sum sort of two or more estimates. But what does it give us, right? It gives us the new estimate and the new margin of error, right? And as long as we have those, right, we can begin to do our test on those. So as I'm sort of moving through too hurriedly to get to the end, you know, one of the things that made me think about, and I have this little student group that I have, sort of what I call a student consulting center. We did some work for an organization in Newaygo County, which is north of, and so, you know, again, what was I trying to do when we sort of talked about, could we add the margin of errors? Well, that just sort of seemed to confuse all the users. So what did we sort of come up with is this trend, right? It is sort of say, to try to come up with a visual, right, to help the user understand, you know, what that is. Here's another sort of way that this has evolved into is a group that we do some things for. This is called Talent 2025 in Grand Rapids or West Michigan. And again, right, so when I presented all this information to those people, before we did all this, right, you put the margin of errors in, you try to do all those things that, you know, being that good statistician that you were taught to do. But again, right, the ultimate user of those things, they don't know what to do with the margin of errors, right? And so that's why, you know, we have sort of that color-coded guide. Again, we're still working on that, but we're trying to sort of help people think about that. For you guys that are younger, right, this may not make any sense, but you, those of you who are old, right, if you've ever played Clue, right, how do you win Clue, right? Is there the smoking gun? No, there's not, right? And you use ACS data, right? You're putting together the circumstantial case. It's the law show on TV that you're never going to see, right? Because, you know, no one breaks down and says, aha, right? When you use ACS data, right, you're making that circumstantial case about here's poverty, right? Here's SNAP use. Here's low income. Here are people in need, right? Because you're not going to, you don't know that the person who's poor is also the person who doesn't own an automobile, right? Because we don't have that information. But when we aggregate those things to census tracts or blocks or whatever, right, we just begin to know things about the communities and where they live. So that's what I'll leave you with in sort of thinking about, you know, my Professor Plum, right? So with the pipe wrench in the parlor, right? And so that's where I think if you are using census data, that's sort of the way to think about it. American Fact Finder, if you were to Google any of these things, right, they're easy to do. I know that's a horrible website or, you know, link to write down, but Google American Fact Finder, the ACS handbooks for data users. If you were to Google that, it would take you straight there. That's that little consulting project I showed you, and there's the Talent 2025 dashboard too. And again, you can Google all those and find it. There's my email address if you have any questions, and happy to share any of that with you. I am working on one sort of paper for that I have sort of a working draft of that I thought I would submit to Journal of Health Administration Education, but kind of on this idea, right, of teaching you know, students to be better consumers and using the margin of errors and standard errors and the American Community Survey. So, sorry, I know that was a track meet. Appreciate you guys staying this long.
Are there any questions for the speaker? I have a question. You use a school sample cheat test to compare two different groups, right?
Yes. They have to be, right? They're independent, right? They would be independent for years or independent in geography, right?
Yeah, but for same county in different year, for example, the composition of
you're right.
Right,
yeah, so but you know that kind of data is typically not going to be in the American Community Survey, right? Smoking data is just going to be right? It's just simple proportions, right? So it's the proportion of race, ethnicity, it's the proportion that don't have a vehicle, it's the proportion in poverty, right?
Yeah.
Hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
So. Right, and so, but we don't, you won't see that perhaps in the American Community Survey, I don't think. Right, and again, right, there's not that health data there. That's what's missing, right? So it won't be like that information you talked about. That we don't know, you know, the longevity of those individuals, right? And so it's summarized to a geography, right? Track, block, county, city, or something to that effect.